council members. What we have this evening is really sort of a preview discussion. As we're looking in the horizon over the next 5 to 10 years, there are a lot of pretty significant projects on our horizon, everything from LRT to 252, fire stations, community activity center, teen center, senior center, and there's a few others that we'll get to tonight. And so tonight is really about providing some high-level updates on each of those projects, some initial ideas on potential funding sources, some time frames, very preliminary time frames on sort of the timing of some of those projects, and then really previewing them the next few months. There are a couple projects that do need some of your decisions in the near term. Those would specifically be the community activity center, the central fire station, and then the senior center to make some decisions around those in terms of go, no-go, timing of those, funding of those. Those three in particular are very intertwined, and so we need some decisions on those here in the next few months. Some of the other projects that we'll walk through are a little bit more, some are very long-term in nature, and some are, you know, within the next couple of years, but just want to, we want to preview that for you. The other piece that we will share on the screen, we'll talk about kind of our current status on bonding, where we are today in terms of the local projects that we have bonded, and then when some of those bond commitments roll off, so you'll see the time frame on that. And then there's this Gantt chart. So we do have a lot to cover. I think there's like 30-ish slides, 35 slides, and so we're going to be passing the mic a little bit here, so I just ask the directors to move relatively swiftly, and if the council has any questions, they can come back and dig into those, but we just have a lot to cover and want to just make sure to move through. Let's go from there. So how this is organized is each project has a description, a timeline, some expected costs. We've broken those up into some overarching, say, the larger projects, and then some other projects that may need some annual funding sources, depending on council decisions. We'll talk about kind of the current local status of our bonding commitments, expected time frames, and then some immediate decisions that we need to chat about. So with that, I will advance.
You know, just tell you the next slide.
Yep.
So Mayor, members of the council, really just an overview of, we talked about this back at the, I believe, the May work session, about the community activity center improvements. The main portions of that is the conversion of ice arena number one to gym space. So it could be divided into three basketball courts or three volleyball courts or 9 to 12 pickleball courts. Really sort of precipitated by the dissolution of the North Metro Youth Hockey Association that kind of served most of, or at least the ISD, 279 people in Brooklyn Park. And the shortage of basketball courts throughout our community. We're wrestling with yet another issue with trying to get more court space, more court time through the school district at local schools. So a challenge there. So that's kind of the primary piece of that. Also, the improvements to the existing entrances and corridors. So as part of the 2018 park bond, that was identified as a need and part of the community park bond referendum that folks voted for. There was $2 million set aside to improve those existing entrances and corridors. The relocation of recreation and parks office space. This is really precipitated by design, where the bulk of our parking is on the west side of the building, yet the main entrance is on the south side. The preliminary design concept that we talked about back in May was moving the primary entrance to the west, facing the west side, so folks as they're walking in from the parking lot enters directly in the building. And then the parking lot and grounds improvements, so kind of what we talked about this last discussion with events. Relocating the drive entrance and creating a better green space to the south of the CAC, so between the CAC and 85th, really that can be utilized as event space and open green space for a lot of different activities. So that's kind of the project description in a nutshell. The timing, the first thing we need to do is a structural assessment of Rink 1. We've looked at it. We've done a preliminary high-level structural assessment of Rink 1 and believe that the conversion is relative, in construction terms, relatively easy to do. But we wanted more in-depth structural assessment before really going a lot further down that road. And then we, at that point, we'd break into design development, where we start putting together the kind of final design concepts and the construction documents, and hopefully bid this next spring with the idea that we would start construction in June or so. Kind of a little under a year from now. And that would also allow for us to get through this ice season. We've got commitments to existing ice users, so to allow us for a full year to be able to kind of redraft all of the ice parameters, if you will. Total project cost is between $12 and $15 million. All of those improvements that we just talked about there is pushing the $15 million mark. And that's essentially what we're looking at in this. So if you go to the next one, Jay. Other factors for consideration, like I mentioned, the existing user groups. So we have Three Rivers Figure Skating Club, Champlain Park Youth Hockey, and then Osseo Maple Grove Hockey Association. Those three are representing the ice sports participants in Brooklyn Park at this point. The Champlain Park Youth Hockey is essentially any of the young people who play hockey in Brooklyn Park that are in the Anoka-Hennepin School District are part of the Champlain Park Youth Hockey Association. So hockey uses the school district boundaries instead of geographic city boundaries. So there will be an impact to those groups. Those groups currently have the luxury of having availability on two sheets. So if something's happening on one sheet, maybe it's a high school hockey game or something, that they've got the opportunity to get ice on the other sheet. There is the ability to reconfigure, redraw that, so that the impact is minimal, but I won't say that there's no impact to those programs. There certainly will be an impact to those programs. On the flip side of that, Brooklyn Park Athletic Association, Brooklyn Park Traveling Basketball, are starving for gym time and court time. So trying to be able to meet the needs of another group within our community and really solve one issue without creating a large other issue is really the goal here. And really, as we kind of look at reinventing the community activity center, being truly a community hub, just diversifying the activities within that building makes total sense, right? So it's adding basketball or volleyball or pickleball to the current portfolio of activities just draws in more of our community. So, the funding, we were awarded $5 million of Minnesota State Bonding in the 2023 legislature. We have $2 million, as I said, from the park bond that was dedicated to the CAC entrance improvements. The other options that exist out there, and again, this is kind of just for consideration and awareness, $2 million funding for the senior center improvements. That was also part of the park bond referendum. I'm not offering this up as a solution to the CAC and then turning our backs on the seniors. That's by no means a part of this. But if we were to have to incorporate senior center component into the CAC improvements, that money would certainly be allocated, I think, to this project. And we'll get to how all of these things kind of play into each other eventually here. Reallocate unspent funds from the park bond referendum. In my estimate, there's about $5 million of projects that could be by council vote, could be reallocated throughout this process. A big chunk of that was for the development of a park at 101st and Winnetka, the future end of the light rail. So there was a $3.3 million pot that was set aside in that park bond referendum that potentially could be utilized to help support these improvements, and then allowed for when there's a purchase of land that goes along with that and allow that development money to replace this. So we do still reach the goal of developing that park. And then general obligation bonds and OSLAD funds. Our open space land acquisition development park dedication fees. That fund is being tapped, has been tapped for River Park, being tapped for Mississippi Gateway. So it's been heavily used at this point, or been tapped at this point, but could also be an opportunity if needed to supplement this budget.
You know how much is in the Osmond fund?
Currently, as of this morning, when I was going back and forth with our representative from finance, the balance sheet was $2.8 million.
Okay, just make a quick note about that. As Eric Tolbert mentioned, park dedication fees go into that fund, as well as some of our cell tower revenues go into that fund.
Okay, members of the council, Mayor, thank you for your time. Kind of just revisiting where we were earlier this year from that fire station tour that we all took. One thing that stands out before we get into a little bit of the specifics is this Emergency Operations Center multi-agency jurisdictional training needs. That's going to help us with some bonding support, hopefully, for that central fire station. No change in location, and this would be kind of that hub for us, for our central fire station. The timeline, as you see here, this all does kind of hinge on what decisions are made with the central fire station. For station 3, 4, and 1, I do have that information available to us just with projected costs and how far out that looks, but we can get into that in a minute. And then the expected cost really is going to be more towards that $25 million for the central fire station. Next slide, please. The other factors to include is this project is tied to the CAC, the senior center. Once we're able to vacate that, then our facility would become available for the senior center. We did secure the $1.15 million in 2023 bonding to help us with design and pre-design. And then also we have some additional options for the 2024 legislative session. We requested the $12.7 million in state bonding to assist us with the overall cost of that central fire station. Then we also would be looking into just any additional federal fund options.
So this one seems like a difficult one, just because getting dollars to fire stations seems difficult from the legislature. How strong is our claim regionally? And, I asked that because what was that segment went to?
The Burnsville? The public safety training facility.
Yeah.
It was more of a police.
So it was the public training facility, the training facility. It seemed like there are number of hands in the pot from police departments, right? Other cities' police departments. If we say this is a regional fire station, or somebody's going to be regional fire station, right? Or this is a regional fire station, I guess the central one. Are other cities buying into that in terms of saying yes, we'll show up for training, or yes, if Brooklyn Center has a specific issue that they had in the past with some of the unrest? This is the place that they'll use. How strong can we make that argument so that if I get in front of our electeds, I can say, no, this isn't just supported by Brooklyn Park, this is supported by other cities, this is now a regional issue, we need your support on this, and these other cities are willing to say we support this as well.
The Emergency Operations Center has a great name for just not only the area locally, but the region. That was exercised, and Brooklyn Park stood up for Brooklyn Center for the civil unrest. And there's no other fire department or jurisdiction that has a robust emergency operations center. So that is very favorable for us to support that. As far as regional training center, it would not look like the East Metro Training Center or similar to what Minneapolis at one point had. There's nothing in this northwest corner of the metro to support the needs of the training. Now, depending on what that looks like, we did discuss options similar to Burnsville's fire station, remember the tower, where some of those departments could come They can do some extrication training. They can do some stairwell work, smoking up that multi-tiered, multi-level structure to assist with firefighter rescue. That is very feasible. Because Minneapolis has shut theirs down, there's really a number of departments that are traveling all the way over the East Metro and Maplewood to use that facility.
Can we write that up then and make sure that that's made very clear? Because I can start talking to people about that now. But that needs to be, yeah. I mean, that needs to be like one of the, in addition to what we did with Brooklyn Center, that needs to be one of the center points to make that case for regional. Otherwise, they're going to, they don't do fire. Right? It's got to be a regional, we're working together, we're training together, we're creating capacity in the Northwest region. Northwest region is traditionally under invested in anyways, right? I just, the sooner we can make sure we're on the same page with that, and other cities are saying, absolutely, we'll use that facility, we're on the same page, the easier it is to make that pitch. So.
I would suggest, Mayor and Council, is I think Chief Conway can go and work with other chiefs, and potentially they can be part of the development process.
Right.
I think as Chief Conway is saying, I don't know how many of you might have been to the facility in Maplewood or Minneapolis. That is like a training facility exclusively for training. And I think what we're hoping for here at the Central Fire here in Brooklyn Park is things that would allow us to do like 50% of the training.
Right.
Those types of things that they're able to do in capacities, that they're able to do in Burnsville. And I think we could try to get that regional support from our neighboring cities towards that end.
Yeah, definitely. And there's some conversation surrounding just even academic training. Not only fire departments have the ability to do that, you know, from a tower standpoint, which is going to be different, similar to Burnsville, but different from East Metro or Minneapolis. Those are fairly large training centers with the ability to have Class A combustible burn, wood, fire, cardboard. They also have propane, natural gas. We probably would have a conversation about putting a facility like that in the middle of the city. They're robust training centers, so they do require constant property management or training management, scheduling management. I did manage the East Metro training facility for five plus years, and there's no less than 25 different agencies coming to use that facility, and it's a busy place, especially because there isn't anything up this way. But there are other opportunities, and like City Manager Strobel said, part of the conversation or the language was wanting other fire chiefs in the area to support that design, to see what it could look like, not just in an emergency operations center, but if we had a modified training facility similar to what we saw in Burnsville, that probably could assist the communities more so for just rapid training compared to full-on live fire training.
My question, when I hear you say that Minneapolis closed down their facility?
Yes, sir.
And what was the reason Minneapolis closed down their facility? Do you know how long it was in existence prior to it being closed down?
I do. It had been built when that, I wish I could give you a date, but it's greater than 10 years old. I'm sorry, I missed that.
I said, you got to give me a date.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
I can find out for you and I'll follow up.
No, I'm just good.
One of the reasons that we did a lot of joint training when I was with St. Paul Fire with them, and partially propane training is expensive, and it got to the point where it was not cost effective for them to continue that model. They're also very busy training their academies, and to have outside agencies come and consistently work with them, that became kind of just people bumping into each other. And ultimately, they let that part of the training facility go, and they use theater smoke to assist in their training.
Okay, yeah. I just want to get an understanding on why they closed a facility and we try to open up the doors to one and they close up one, they just right down the street.
So I think some of this, and some of this is just legislation 101, or maybe for some folks 301, I'm not sure. But we need this capacity for our fire department. I don't know how else to put it. Issues with carcinogens and health issues, it has to be done. I get it. We want to seem like we're the most conservative with the dollars ever, especially certain areas. I get it. But the reality of the situation is if I go to the legislature and I ask for money, and I ask Senator Harper to ask for dollars, I ask the speaker to use her political clout, I need to have some type of reasoning to say we can get the dollars that we need for this. And sometimes that means adding some capacity that we don't specifically use, but that will allow us to get the remaining capacity that we need as a city. Now we can play it your way and go up there and get zero. That's what's been done in the past. Or we can come with the argument that says this is more inclusive, bring some of these hits some of the capacity, because I'm not hearing you say you want a full training facility. So hit some of the capacity, expands the argument to allow, to give our legislators a cover to say, we're going to make an exception to use state dollars in bonding to cover what the Northwest region here would mean Brooklyn Park. I'll give them the dollars to do that. Because if we simply go up there saying, listen, we need some money for a fire department, they're going to say, not interested, absolutely not, not going to do it. Not going to happen. We don't do that. Literally, that's what they've said. So then we foot the bill. So I would rather say we create some limited capacity, and then we get the larger capacity that we need as a city, so we don't have to foot the bill. Using state dollars to expand what? So if someone from Eden Prairie in Minnetonka, Plymouth, DeRange, and other people is kicking in to pay for regional infrastructure that we need, I don't see a problem with that, because that's been happening across the rest of the state for quite some time. It hasn't been happening in the region, in Northwest regional area, because they've been leading with their argument. So I think we need to understand that as the sixth largest city, there's a certain sophistication we need to bring to the legislative process. And we have to understand that that's just a reality, that we need to do that to meet our infrastructure. Otherwise, we will continue to lag, and then we'll be coming back here saying, how do we afford our fire station? So I'd rather legislature understand to fully invest in the Northwest region, which has not been done, versus us footing the bill for something historically that should have already historically been done, and it has not been done. So we can pepper with all these questions. We can ask about this model and that model. I don't hear you saying, Chief, that you're asking for a full scale, right? You're saying, correct,
it's this tower that we all kind of visited, building out some of that capacity, getting buy-in from other regional partners, and then that infrastructure is going to be there if they don't use it or not, personally. If they said, hey, you know what, we lost interest, hey, we still get to have a fire station. So I don't, you know, it kind of confuses me as to why we would care if we still get to inherit it and use it for our fire department. That's kind of how this is done. So I'll leave it at that, but I think legislatively we need to kind of level up here. Otherwise, we're going to be telling our fire department, we care, but we don't care. Or we care, but we don't want to do what necessary at the legislative level, so we're going to put that all on our local taxpayers. I think our local Brooklyn Park taxpayers would rather much say, hey, we got the dollars from the legislature, right? Makes sense to me. Right?
Makes sense to me, too.
Wonderful. So was there anything else? Or?
One additional thing is our community partners, there's a great need for just training. They have combination models. They're not full-time fire departments like we are. And it is one it's a great opportunity for us to continue to build those partnerships and to support their level of training, not just within our city, because they come to Mutual Aid Ottaway to augment our resources here. But it is a good opportunity for the greater community for them to just have a robust training program and to hone their skills. It would look ideally very similar to what Burnsville's model did. It is limited in the sense of you're not bringing all these apparatus and having all this space to do live fire training. But the bread and butter work, the rescue life safety work that really matters here and now, that is something that we'd be able to support those departments that have combination models and they're not full-time such as our department, and we can help them accomplish that.
I know I was talking to the chief of Maple Grove, and they're still paid on call.
Yes.
Right, I said it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still paid on call. And I think they were saying that they're struggling with, do they switch to that model? And I think as they switch to that, if they were to, I think it would be nice to have a facility where they can kind of game out how that's going to look, but also have that relationship with Brooklyn Park to build that out. But they were also saying there's a lack of training facilities nearby. And he literally stopped, it was Senator Hoffman and I, and he literally stopped us and had that conversation of, we need more facilities in the Northwest suburbs, right? So I think it's a, I'm not going to say it's an easy sell. Asking anybody for big money is not an easy sell. But I do think it's a much easier sell if we make it legitimately regional and we can get a Maple Grove, a Brooklyn Center, and some other people to come either testify with us or just write some memos of support, then it is, okay, this is really a regional thing. We can give the funding for something like this. I know Councilmember Morrison.
Yeah. Now, I just want to clarify now. The senior center dependent on construction of a new fire station, what does that mean?
If we were to build a new central fire station, when we vacate that building, then that would go to the senior center. Is that correct?
Yeah. We renovated for the senior center.
Okay, so I've asked for, well, I don't know how much I support that because we have a senior center already in the CAC.
Yeah, yes, we do have a space for senior programs, very small.
And that very small space does not reach all of our seniors.
That's correct. And most of our senior programming actually happens within our banquet rooms. And so we are playing this constant game about who's the priority, right? The community renting space, the senior programs, bingo, quilting, fitness, et cetera, et cetera. So then they're consistently using space not designed for the program.
So this direction is, I support the mayor in making this happen as an argument. I wasn't in support of taxpayers funding it. The creative way of partnering with other surrounding communities to make sure that their voice is being heard, saying that this is what we're trying to do within the region, I think that's a benefit. And somebody else's foot in part of that bill is always OPM, other people's money. So when, I guess I'm concerned about the senior center number one. And then, so we talk about demolishing the old library still to erect this facility, new facility.
Yes, sir. That is the location that has been identified.
All right, we discussed the senior center.
It's on here too.
Yeah, so we got 35 slides. I'm sorry, we got held up on this one, but we will be discussing the senior center later.
In Central Fire, CAC, senior center, we will come back to council. This is a preview of like everything on the menu over the next few years. And we will specifically need to come back to talk about these three items. So we're going to move on.
Thanks.
So for east, west, and north to include Central Fire Station, the construction, I know we talk about it, but they weren't designed to house firefighters 24/7, 365. On top of the safety concerns, just with the moisture, remember the dehumidifiers, and we're emptying those multiple times a day, to include just having private spaces and shower spaces. That really is, we've outgrown those structures based on the model they were originally constructed for. And that really is the core of the project. These are tentative timelines for those three. We do have it organized, as we've laid it out with CNH, the architect. If you want a full package or if you want it itemized, basically, and what those projected costs are, I have all that information for you. lastly, what does that look like for response? And probably the best way I can describe it is we have a full-time fire department. We are down to shaving seconds, not minutes, from where we have our current stations. We are looking at reaching anybody in the Cookham Park city limits within 6 minutes. 6 to 8 minutes, that is what our goals are, because there's two components for fire, life safety and property conservation. And so the time really is what we are down in the weeds on. Compared to different models that are paid on call, they're in excess of 10 and 12 minutes. So that is another component of just those structures and their locations.
What happens, and I don't want to dwell on this too, because I know we have other slides. What happens if we can't do that? What if, just so we understand the worst case scenario, we stay with, and I saw the fire department, I saw the defense's fire. What does happen if we have to stay with those? What does that mean in terms of health, response time, quality?
Dan and I would have to have a conversation about what that looks like to renovate those existing structures and what that the air handling units are a concern, and then piping and water in those departments. So the cost of use is growing substantially. Is that fair to say?
It is. We've been deferring some maintenance on the facilities, knowing that it's possible that we're not going to be using them anymore. They need roofs, they need HVAC improvements. The West Fire Station, for instance, was somehow constructed with not a lot of commercial grade materials, and our maintenance staff would love to see that one leveled as well. Certain investments would have to happen, as Sean alluded to, but more concerning probably is the morale of the fire department and keeping full-time staff in very poor conditions.
And then for the air quality, right, that's a health issue with the cars?
It is in terms of the gear, right? We're working on trying to improve that in the interim with an exhaust grant that we've got.
So lastly, let's say we said we're not entertaining this $39 million. I'm not saying that, it's the worst case. There's still some decent money that needs to be spent to renovate those, just to make them workable, livable.
Yes. Right? Yes, they're not positive pressure stations, which means it forces any contaminants coming into the living quarters of the kitchen versus negative air systems that, to Dan's point, gear isolated. There's only one way that exhaust can go, and we are very good and very diligent about washing our gear right after a fire and then shower within the hour. So we are doing the best that we can to make sure that our people are healthy. We're at a limitation of the facility. Okay. And then, Mayor, to answer your second question, south of 85th, east and west, and with Central, those time frames, those are in pretty good shape. And Kim and I have had some conversations about just what that development looks like in that northwest corner, and to include what it looks like for our response times going out to the east, where Station 4 is. And I have some additional information that I can share with you as far as what those response times look like.
Okay.
So these are also factors that we can consider options for additional funding. Though that MnDOT project for 252 is out, being that may have to be relocated, there most likely is some assistance tied to that. But because of that, we've looked at moving that fire station because of the north and south access on 252, as well as Blue Line. So with that impacting potentially West Fire Station and access from crossing the tracks, those types of things delay our response. I do have prior experience with that, with light rail going down University in St. Paul. We have two fire stations, 18 and 20, that were affected by that. And it makes a difference because the train is going to hold up those responses. And those are times that we can do our best to document delays due to trains, but that still doesn't help the person on the other end. And then similar to what I was just sharing with Kim and I's planning for the vision for the Northwest development within the city, what that potentially looks like, either keeping the fire station and adding additional resources. If we do that in Station 4's area, we do have some components where we won't reach the west side of the city within that 8 minutes. But I also have, working with John Nergy, I've got some heat maps and then some time, response time information to share with you. And then that would be it. Just looking to see what that state bonding looks like for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll equip you with this. Come on, CMC meeting with complaints about they need to buy us a new fire station. And at the 252 meeting, the complaints that the state needs to buy us a new East fire station.
So I like that.
That's our funding.
We should have put that into our anti-displacement letter.
Right? We should have, actually.
Maybe we can make an amendment.
Yeah, we can make
an amendment. Send another follow-up letter. I like that approach, though.
So senior center discussion, essentially it's predicated on the idea that Central Fire would be relocated, rebuilt, as the way this has been laid out. So renovating the existing fire station, prioritized for exclusive adult and senior program use. The timing is dependent completely on the construction of the new Central Fire Station. I'd just say if that doesn't happen, the previous plan for the CAC does not include the expanded senior center. That was developed, that concept was developed with the idea that Central Fire would be relocated and we would move, redevelop the senior center, or develop the former Central Fire as a senior center. So, project cost, estimated project cost, $3 million. As I said, we've got $2 million from, we've got $2 million from the park bond. That was earmarked, dedicated to the senior center. Again, the options are very similar to what they were for the community activity center as well. I will say, just reiterating this point, the senior community has been the most vocal about not delivering on the park bond referendum projects. You know, the 2018 park bond referendum was coming up on 5 years ago for that vote. The Central Fire Station has kind of delayed that component of it. There is a definite sentiment within the community that they've been forgotten or left behind or ignored. Just want council to be aware of that. I think you've heard from the seniors feeling like they haven't had, you know, certain service level, but this component is another piece of that.
Quickly, just for other cities our size, how many of them have specific areas for seniors sponsored by the city?
Boy, I'd have to get you an exact, but most of our size do, you know, like when you talk about other departments, but, you know, similar size, Plymouth, Eden Prairie, Woodbury, Egan. I'm trying to think of them off the top of my head, you know, but kind of similar size cities.
They have senior centers?
They do, yeah. Okay.
Is it within their community center?
Some are dedicated wings of their community center. Some are standalone facilities.
Okay.
Okay. Next one, another park bond referendum project with the Youth and Teen Recreation Center. You know, the renovation of the existing space, but also the creation, expanding the facility for additional program space and workforce development space. We're right in the middle of the pre-design community engagement phase right now. We hope to move into the design development piece in October to be able to keep this project moving forward. We moved bidding out until June of 2024. We currently have, maybe you want to go to that slide, Jay. We currently have a $4 million state bonding request in for the 2024 legislative cycle. We have received word that we are, you know, it's not, nothing's final, but there's $500,000 in congressionally directed spending that has been earmarked for the teen center. We requested $4 million. We've been notified that that number has been reduced to $500,000, but it does sound like we will get that money. There is the $2 million, like I said, in the park bond. We envision that, you know, kind of the full facility need being that $4 to $8 million, which potentially can be phased, you know, with the potential of a maybe a dedicated gym space being added if park, you know, if other funds were to become available. But again, we kind of, it's the same, the all park projects, parks and recreation projects are the same kind of funding sources. The other one I would add is, you know, the Heritage Funds, because the Zanewood Recreation Center is an existing facility, the potential to use Heritage Funds could be considered to refresh that space if needed. So.
How much is in the Heritage Fund?
So that one, I probably wouldn't recommend. I know that we try to keep a minimum balance of around $5 million. That's to support, like, all of the maintenance issues for all of our buildings. And this is the one where we were relying on our LGA dollars to fund this. It was typically putting in about $1.5 million with a little bit of general fund, maybe $300,000. So we were putting in about $1.7 million a year, and staff was projecting we should be putting in closer to $2.9 million.
And that was
like 5 years ago. So, while there is a little bit of fund balance in the Heritage Fund, we wouldn't recommend necessarily using the fund. We want to maintain a minimum balance just because it's not an emergency situation at this point.
Okay, so I know we want to go through this quickly. I do know that we need to get a meeting with Representative Frazier around this, but there's $70 million that was allocated from the Office of, I can't remember. But a lot of it is towards youth-related. So the issue is, you know, we discussed this too, is the issue is, do we want to make a request for some of this? Because a lot of it is youth violence prevention. Do we want to use that for continuums of care, taking a lead on that? Or do we want to use some of that for this community activity center? We may be able to get for both, right? Because there's regional arguments for both. So we might be able to put in for both. But I do know that there's about $70 million. No, it's not all for us. But, you know, you gotta write the grants and all that stuff. But there's some money at the state level that we can write some grants for this.
And we've looked at some of that. And most of it seems to be programmatic, though, not necessarily bricks and mortar. But maybe we haven't dug it far enough to be.
Yeah, I don't know. When I was talking to Rep. Frazier, he was saying that some of it could be because, you know, we have these continuums of care for youth. He was saying that it could be used for that as well, for some of the buildings for that. So maybe he was, and he could have been, I mean, they passed a lot of legislation, so he could have been off himself. But he's usually pretty on it, so we can put in a request to his office. They can help then, and then I can have a meeting with him as well, and we can meet with him.
I have a question. In the midst of all of this, is there any consideration or thoughts behind what if Zanewood closed a school down? Then what does that leave the city of Brooklyn Park?
I guess is your question, would we want to utilize that space?
Well, that's still a school building.
Correct.
So it don't belong to us. And we added on to a school building. We have to make reservations just to use a gym to benefit their needs.
The gym is the school building, but the recreation center is the city portion of that. The city paid for the construction of that, paid for the part of the joint powers agreement.
Okay, so we own that piece.
Correct.
And we added on to that piece.
Correct.
Okay, so I'm with the understanding, I thought I was understanding that that was, you know, school building. So I'm just trying to, grasp this, because I'm not in full support of this as of yet, because we have other needs in other areas of our city. And to keep sinking money in one area and not servicing the needs of the other district and the needs of those youth, I just can't get that out of my head.
Yeah, I get it. It's tough. But for me, you know, don't speak for everybody, but I think strategically, when we talk about reducing crime, we like to talk about it, but then rarely do we actually really move the eight ball. If that's the area where we know we're seeing the lack of infrastructure for the youth that really need it there, do we cater to... I struggle with the senior center for the same reason. Seniors deserve a place, but my first priority as mayor, and city council can determine what their first priority is per person. My first priority is keep folks safe. So when I see a senior center, it makes sense because we have a senior population, we want things for them to do. But using those dollars to put it towards a youth center, where we know that if we have a lot of youth infrastructure, we're going to push crime down. We're not going to push crime down for one generation. We're going to push it down for multiple generations. And we know the area we need to put it to push it down for multiple generations. Now, if I move it, because I've heard, you know, I've talked to some of the people that are like, I want something here. And sometimes they're moving in good faith. Sometimes they're not moving in good faith. There's some racial undertones, if I'm honest. Sometimes they're saying, we want it here. And I'm saying, you don't necessarily have those same issues there, right? If I'm thinking, how do I get ahead of this thing long term? I need to build an infrastructure for all those kids that are really struggling with it, because that's where the hot spots. When we look at some of the issues that youth are dealing with, if I put a heat map on, it's Zanewood. So why, from a strategic perspective, would I put it in a cold area just so I can say, hey, I got you guys some recreation? Or do I have some integrity and fidelity and say to the mission of keeping everyone safe and say, let me initially invest here. When this has calmed down, when we've done some of the development and we've got longer-term development dollars, now I can take those dollars and begin to build this infrastructure everywhere else. But when you have limited resources, because nothing up there are we saying, hey, just go to this fund and get the money, right? So clearly we're working with limited resources here. So if I'm working with limited resources, I have to go to the problem areas first. Otherwise, I'm disingenuous when I go to the public and I say, I'm the safest, most seen, most this, most that. I want to make sure everyone is safe. I'm being disingenuous because I'm not addressing the hot spot. So for me, it's straightforward strategically. This is necessary and it's easily justified. And if I go in front of residents, they're going to say, well, I want something over here. I'm going to say, I hear you. I hear that you want something above 85th. We have a, you know, we do have a CAC, but I hear you want it in your neck of the woods. But do you guys want to feel safer long term? This is what the math is telling us. This is what the police department is telling us. This is what youth is telling, youth center is telling us. I mean, the Parks and Rec is telling us. This is what our basic information is telling us. I need to put this fire out first because there is a fire down there. So that would be my justification to people that are saying, I want one right where I live. So I think this makes sense, personally. If I could allocate dollars from other areas to this, I would highly prioritize this, more so than many other things. I don't think fire, because that's basic infrastructure. But I would say this needs as much support as it can get. Because if you don't take care of youth now, you'll be taking care of them later. And you'll be taking care of their families later.
And that's what we're seeing, and that's what they're telling us. So I mean, you want to tie right on that one, but I do think that this is a strategically key to us getting what we want 2 to 4 years from now.
I just have a difference of opinion, because as long as we miss those other youth in those other areas, they're not providing any service to those particular kids.
I hear you.
But they don't have transportation to get to that centrally located where you're trying to put that emergency.
And I know you want to move to this, but and maybe this isn't for you, because I think I think you're going to be stuck where you're stuck. But I'm going to say this. If I talk to a police officer, or I talk to Chief Brule, and Chief Brule says, we need more infrastructure here. This will keep the city safer. That's my first priority. My first priority is not to say to the East District or the Central District or the West District or whoever I'm catering to, hey, I'm going to get you something because that's what you want and these kids want it too. My first priority is to say, how do I keep us safe? And sometimes that means putting resources in places we would rather not, or that makes us uncomfortable. Strategically, everyone is saying this area needs to be addressed. We can have a difference of opinion. My difference of opinion is centered around prioritization of what kids are dealing with. It seems to me that no one is saying in some of these other areas, are we facing a huge risk of dealing with the issues that youth are dealing with long term, in terms of crime or turning to crime or getting caught up in the system. It seems in this particular corridor, people are saying there is a huge risk, and if we don't deal with this issue, we're going to have problems 10 years from now as a city. So prioritizing that is key versus saying, well, these other kids aren't blah, 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 blah. Wasn't the youth center where I was at when I was growing up either, but I wasn't facing some of those same issues, and I was able to deal with it. I don't know that my parents would have said, I need a youth center, even though everything is taken care of. I think they would have said, he's cool, put it where it needs to be put, so that I'm not dealing with crime 5 or 10 years from now that I could have prevented. But my family tends to look at things a little strategically. So other people may say, I just want it. I'm saying, strategically, that is a fight I'm willing to take on, because it's going to long-term reduce crime. And that is the number one priority of the city. And anyone who thinks that it's not the number one priority of the city, I think is very much out of touch with why governments exist in general, right? So this one, I don't want to speak on it too much longer. I know Jay, I'm probably getting on your nerves with this, but it is key that this part happens. Otherwise, we're dealing with this 4 years from now, 6 years from now, 8 years from now. And then people are saying, what happened? And we're saying, oh, somebody wanted a rec center over here, so we put it over here. Why didn't you put it in a hot spot? Well, because it's people asked for it. So I think strategically we just need to lead, which is something easier said than done. I think we need to lead on this one and say strategically we're going to deal with this issue. We can have a difference of opinion. Mm-hmm. So I know we want to move on to the next slide.
Okay. Moving on. Dan.
All right. I'll be real brief on all of these, but to expand the city to its full potential here in the northwest corner, we also need water to provide for the fire service, and that would be a new water tower that we're proposing. The cost of the water tower is about $9 million. Looking at that in the 2025 to 2028 range, again, it's kind of driven by development. We also have to do two water main extensions under the highway. It's about $3.3 million, again, to serve the northwest corner of town. Next slide, please. The funding options, of course, the water utility funds these investments primarily, but sometimes we do need to issue bonds if we don't have enough cash on hand. We are constantly reviewing what our fund balance is in the water fund and projecting those needs, and bonding is a common practice in utilities to get that cash to pay for these big projects. But we're going to continue to pursue state funding, bonding, state water revolving funds, potentially federal funding, community project funds, which is also that congressionally directed spending, and other federal grants if available. Moving on to Highway 252, we've talked about this one a lot, so I'll be real brief. We're in the middle of the environmental impact statement for the draft of that. That should be completed by 2025. Once the final environmental impact statement, that's the FEIS and the record of decision, are anticipated in 2026. And then we anticipate construction 2028, 2029, somewhere in that range. Next slide, please. Estimated cost for Brooklyn Park's participation is in the $27 to $32 million range. We need to develop a funding strategy for that, and of course some of it does depend on the final design of the project. But we've already secured $17 million of regional solicitation money. $7 million is for the interchange at 85th and 52, and $10 million is for the interchange at Brookdale Drive and 22. Other options for the unfunded $10 to $15 million, we do get a little over $3 million a year in municipal state aid from the state. We could direct some of that towards this project, but of course we use that for our arterial streets reconstruction and whatnot. We'll continue to look at state and local bonding options. We could potentially use our franchise fee dollars towards this, although the franchise fee, the rate has not been increased since it started in 2016. We would need to look at increasing those fees in order to do that. Started March of 2016.
Oh, right, it was approved in 15.
Yes, approved in 15. Right. And EDA funds may contribute to this as a development improvement.
Do you have any, I know we're trying to get to it quick, do you have any instincts on what we're going to have to pull from, just so we're aware?
Where we're going to pull the money from?
Yeah.
We may have to bond for it, even a local bond. We don't have that cash on hand, you know, like in our Heritage Fund or in the Franchise Fee Fund. But we'll pursue state bonding as well. I think we have a good chance at some money there.
I think part of the hard part here is we don't know what the final design is yet, so the real impact on the local roads will become more clear once we have a little bit more certainty in terms of what that design of 252 is, so.
For instance, when we did the interchange at 101st and 169, it wound up being about a $23 million project, and we were able to secure about $21 million in grants to pay for that, so we had a very minimal input from Brooklyn Park taxpayers. And we hope to be as successful moving forward on these projects as we were on that one. Blue Line Light Rail, again, and West Broadway reconstruction, we talked about this a number of times, five stations in Brooklyn Park. We're waiting on Minneapolis's final design and recommendations that Hennepin County and Met Council are working through on that. Next slide, please. The timing, environmental review and plan development, 2024 and 2025. The big date for us would be the municipal consent, where they bring in the final design and the city gives it a thumbs up or thumbs down. We had a previous municipal consent back in, 2016, Kim? Was the first time we approved the design? 8 years later, we're going to try it again. We had a project team start in 2014. The anticipated start date was 2021, 7 years. Let's see, how many people are left from that team? Me, you, and Jesse? And Jeff, that's fine.
Luckily, we have some institutional knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't part of it. I wasn't in 2014.
Yeah. But again, the most aggressive timeline would be construction starting in 2026, 2027, and being revenue generating open to the public 2028 to 2030. I would steer towards 2030. So, as part of the funding, we're looking at up to $30 million in Brooklyn Park contributions. $3 million for the construction at the 93rd Avenue intersection. $7 million for the West Broadway construction from Candlewood to 93rd. And then $20 million for various LRT improvements, the road network up at up by Target and the Oak Grove Station, improved water main and sanitary sewer. We really need to replace the water main under West Broadway. We've had numerous water breaks there, and we just don't want to invest the money and then until this project is completed, or you know, as part of the project, I should say. And we'll continue to refine and develop the funding strategies, but similar to Highway 252 would be, you know, municipal state aid, potential EDA, state bonding dollars or local bonding, Oslin has a little bit of contribution for some of the perhaps trail improvements in and around West Broadway as well.
Do we know, oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No, that's right.
I was going to say, do we know anti-displacement dollars, if that will play any role in any of this, or is that going to be a completely separate pot for businesses?
Very separate, yeah.
Okay.
I would say, though, at one point, Target had basically agreed to paying $8 million towards the infrastructure that's part of the project, but, you know, we're going to have to revisit all those conversations with the new plate, because none of that's locked in stone.
Yeah, is there, when can we set up a meeting with them and start talking to them?
The project office actually just held a meeting with Target to just start the conversations again. And so they are putting together, it's a very, I mean, the plans are 90% done. So it's a very robust decision making already happened. So all that's getting dusted off just now. So at some point in the next probably 6 months, we'll have enough information to have a real conversation.
Can they adjust for inflation?
Right. Well, that's part of it. They have not updated those project costs.
Yes, they could adjust for modern costs. That's Stone Age is when we first talked about.
Yeah. So this is related to the LRT. Just recognizing that there's a really robust development vision for up at the Oak Grove station, since it's a Greenfield station primarily, with the exception of existing Target campus. And so, you know, similar to what we just talked about at the development site a mile down the road at the Oak Grove and Zane area, we could anticipate quite a bit of needs for public infrastructure beyond what Dan was just saying. Now, what should be listed under funding sources is private investment too. Like, I wouldn't anticipate that all of these investments would be done by the city, but we have a lot of decision making to do to get to those decisions.
So some of that $100 million, just to be clear, would be assumed by private?
I would assume that, yes. Because, you know, in the past, the city has really called on the private developers to invest in infrastructure as they build out Greenfield. Now, a lot has changed since, and the ways that we operate in the past, I don't know that they fully apply today. But, so that's what I mean about it's going to take some time to kind of flush out that might look like overtime here, and particularly, you know, because Target's the only landowner here.
So buy a Target first. Or buy a Target. So
Yeah, water quality.
To put into Park.
We've talked about PFAS and softening a few times, so again, I'll be brief. We've looked at, you know, lime softening at a treatment plant at a cost of about $47 million, but we don't feel we were ready to recommend moving forward on anything like that because of the PFAS situation. We also, again, talked about purchasing soft water from Minneapolis. That capital cost could be $80 to $100 million. We kind of, from what we heard from the council, we took that off the table a little bit, but when PFAS came back up, we have to keep that as an option. Minneapolis has plenty of water to supply. It's just we have to build an 8-mile-long pipe, maybe two pipes. We have to have redundancy to get it up to Brooklyn Park. And then we'd have to pay Minneapolis water rates, which are 3 times higher than the water rates that Brooklyn Park pays. If the council said, here's the green light, go do these things, it still would take 5 years to develop the plan, construct everything, test everything. Meaning, even if we were given the green light in 2025, we wouldn't be functioning with a soft water or something like that until 2030. And then back to PFAS. We're still waiting on the EPA to issue their final ruling on the contaminant level. It's proposed at 4 parts per trillion. Right now, Brooklyn Park water meets those standards. What we don't know is the trend line. Is our water continuing to have more PFAS in it, or are we leveled out? We don't know those things. Also, even if we meet the standard of 4 parts per trillion, the EPA's goal is for everybody to go to zero. And it's also a policy decision for the council. If we can meet it at 4 parts per trillion and we don't have to put in a PFAS treatment plant, what if EPA changes the rule 5 years down from now and we need to go to zero? Or does the council just want to go to zero right now, you know, just as the best, safest thing to do? Again, policy decisions that we'll be discussing with you as we move forward. Cost estimate could be up to $70 to $80 million based on the cost of St. Paul Park's facility and scaling it up to the size of our facility. and in our community. Operating costs to be determined. It uses granular activated carbon as the treatment system for PFAS.
And we may already cover this, but most cities are going to be facing this cost.
Yes.
And are the feds talking about some type of grants for this?
The feds have some money out there for this. The state has estimated that just to treat the water systems in Minnesota is $28 billion. And I don't have the full details. I mean, I think that's to invest in the capital for these. That's not operating, of course. So it's a moving target. The dollars are extremely high. I was doing some chicken scratching here as we were just talking. And Minnetonka Beach got a community project funding allocation from Representative Phillips. Now, I don't know if it's been downscaled or not since then, but they got apparently $1.7 million. The population of that community, I'm not trying to set off alarms here, but this just blew me away. The population of that community is 590 people. And so that's a $2,900 per capita investment. The median income there is $250,000. And if you took Brooklyn Park's population times that $2,915 allocation, just for fun, we should be in line to get $8.5 million from Representative Phillips. But, okay, sorry, I just go off on tangents like that sometimes.
No.
My analytical side gives me.
We know what that is for.
Yeah.
Hey, can you mention the quarterly sampling? What's going on?
Yes. So the EPA and Department of Health are requiring quarterly sampling of PFAS in our wells. We have one test result so far. The second test result should be coming out within the next few weeks. And we need to get a full year's worth of data before we feel comfortable coming back to the council with some strategies to address that. So stay tuned.
A lot of cities are in the same place.
Yes. In fact, I just was looking at a dashboard that the Department of Health developed, and you can click on any community and see what that first set of readings for PFAS contamination is in your community.
Gotcha. Yep. I know Councilman Klonowski.
Thank you, Mayor. Director, weren't we part of a pilot program for the softening PFAS? Where are we at with that?
We are looking to do a little bit of a pilot study this fall. We had to get in line to get this trailer scheduled to look at different treatment options. So yes, we're planning that. Okay. Like,
so it hasn't started yet?
It has not started yet.
It will be coming.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
And I have a question. What about the monitoring of the new water tower that we approved? Was it last year?
So the water tower that we just painted, that was in the picture that you just saw, the Boone water tower, it is disinfected and good to go. So it's using the same water that it used before we painted it, you know what I mean, the same water system, but now it's completely rejuvenated and good for another 20 years. Funding options, again, we may have to increase water rates to cover the expenses or issue bonds, or we're going to continue to pursue local, state, state and federal funding, community project funding, the whole gamut of trying to find other people's money. Mm.
All right.
That's it.
Sometimes I wish I'd never talked to Dan that term. Coming back to bite me.
Thank you.
No, I used to say it all the time, and now that I didn't have staff, I'm building it up. It's like, oh my goodness, what have I bitten off of?
Yes.
Anyway, sorry.
Grant's in the tail.
That's right. Our enterprise resource planning is software. So what I'll say is that we just wanted to get this out there because it's our software, it's our enterprise software, it's where we do our accounting, we do our utility billing. We have a portion of our human resources in there as well as some CD that's included in it. They have the different modules. It's all in one software. The reason why we wanted to bring it to your attention and at least get it on here, this will be the most aggressive timeline. The system that we use is called New World. It was purchased by Tyler Technology a few years back, and now they decide that they're no longer going to sell New World. So we're just being cautious by saying that we need to move forward with this. And Kim, she doesn't like New World anyway, so she keeps trying to get me to make sure I get a new ERP system, and we need people. You see how long it takes to get, you know, it's a hefty project in order to do. But if we don't have a choice, or if right now they're telling us that they're going to continue to support, you know, the system that we actually have, but we just want to make sure we're being proactive. So that's why we have it on the list. If they tell us no, we think we can muddle along, you know, and start something in July.
I mean, are we going to have to buy a new one? That's what I'm confused. They're not going to sell it anymore, then we just need to...
Yeah, we would have to purchase a new one. That's what this would be. This would not be purchasing New World. This would be getting a new system. I mean, they don't sell New World, but Tyler Technology sells other software. But this is, we would be doing an RFP to look at everything.
Got it.
And this, the cost, we work with our Logis. We work with them to try and figure out a cost, and it will be between $1.6 and $2.6 million. Okay. Just wanted to get them in the mesh radar. All right. We don't have the fun stuff. Can't show you shiny water towers.
No, that's not the key, though.
We don't have potholes to fill. Yes. Is it okay? Yeah.
So... I think this will be interesting area to look into AI,
yeah.
And any efficiencies that these softwares can offer with the help of AI, and or multiple platforms and user interfaces, so not just the. Well, I think everything would be like web-based, but not just like desktop or cell phone even. I'd also be interested in augmented and virtual reality platforms as well. So just putting that out there, it'd be interesting to really help Brooklyn Park to push the space in terms of technology.
Yeah, I'm going to have you lead on that because I don't.
Yeah, I
feel like
words
were
said.
Council
And what is the current, up-to-date, or the most used software that's out there that can provide those things?
Tyler Technology is one that's used a lot because they have different modules that other organizations use. But yeah, we use the New World portion of theirs, but now they have... They purchased a lot of the small companies, and it's Tyler Technologies.
When did the city originally get New World?
I think it was 2009.
Corey's Magic Software.
Oh, it was back to him?
Yeah. Yeah. That was about 9 then.
So 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm. That's about 16 time. Years ago.
We have lots of upgrades. Don't get me wrong, I didn't like it when I walked through the door. But...
But at some point, if they're stopping selling it, that means that somebody they're going to stop supporting it. Mm-hmm. They want, I mean, every software.
They're trying to force you to use theirs, but we wouldn't just do that. We would look at our options that's out there.
Okay. So the next few are just from, we're towards the home stretch here. Are some projects that are more potentially in need of some annual funding? And so we'll just walk through these.
Yeah, just the trail project, there's a plan that was developed by staff with a number of different factors involved that identified 70-plus trail projects. That list right there is our current top five. We've taken a few off the list. There's one, Zane Avenue, that's been taken care of. 63rd has been taken care of. But in order to make all these trail connections, there's an ongoing estimate of $1.5 million over the next 30 years to be able to, some of these are CFROs schools, some of these are other trail gaps to be able to put together and connect them. So, of the possible funding strategies, and Dan might want to jump in on this, just there's about that the allowing franchise fees dollars to be used on trails.
And just for a little historical perspective, when the franchise fee was put in place, it's available to be used for transportation infrastructure projects, including road reconstruction, trails, sidewalks, street rehabilitation. Although the council was not in favor of using the franchise fees for new trails, it was basically trails that would be part of a reconstruction project. So it's a little bit of a gray area on whether or not the council could just say yes, use it for trails or not. I think you could. But again, the funding mechanism was not put in place to include trails as a new trail implementation strategy, but it could be done. And then also just to plant the seed, our franchise agreement with CenterPoint Energy is up. It was a 20-year agreement, or what they call the master franchise agreement. Then we also have an additional agreement specifically for the franchise fees that we collect from CenterPoint Energy, and we're going to be bringing those back to the council after we negotiate with CenterPoint. The council can consider adjusting the fees at that time.
Okay. We've been fairly successful at getting grants and other people's money for this. That's largely what's done many projects the last 5 years. And I would just say the other thing, most of these investments are the southern half of the city, because as the city was built out, trails weren't as common when the city was built out in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in the southern half of the city. Obviously, in the last 20, 25 years, there's been more trails than has been more typical for the planning.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
And those five examples sort of highlight that.
Way funding is very related to the trails. In fact, when we had a staff meeting, because this involves community development, O&M, and Park and Rec, some of the staff were emphasizing that way funding is the same thing as putting in trails, and we shouldn't be doing one without the other. So we have, as you might recall, you've accepted a three-year plan, a plan that we developed over a three-year period for way funding, and that plan is a $1.7 million initial implementation, and then estimated $50,000 a year for maintenance ongoing, maybe up to $100,000 over time here. You could think about it that way too. And there are some park bond funds, about $500,000, that were allocated for wayfinding. The EDA has talked about in the past investing in wayfinding as an economic development and like branding initiative. And so at this point, we are just kind of internally figuring out what it would take to be able to advance a project of installing signs in 2024. So they'll be seeing that discussion through the budgeting process for 2024.
That guy looks like
Elvis.
Looks like Elvis.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a cool
yeah.
Setting, really.
Yeah, I just feel like no one dresses like that.
He also looks like a ghost.
Sorry.
Okay, so wage comparison study. So a few weeks back, we had the opportunity to hear a report and meet Tessa from DDA, David Drone and Associates. During that time, she shared a little bit about some of the work that she's doing. DDA will be conducting our comp study for us. The last time we've had a comprehensive study, it was in 2014, so some time. Since then, our market, as far as the employment market is concerned, it has changed drastically, and not only here for our community, but just across the board. With that said, the city's compensation has fallen significantly in comparison to our comparable cities and other employers. So one of the things that they're going to be doing is, of course, reviewing our market competitiveness and then developing a salary structure for us. that will do three things. One of which is to help make us internally equitable, also externally competitive and legally defensible. The timing of the project, we're going to get started this month or in August. So that's only a couple of hours from now. So so the first part of this month coming, they're going to actually do the research for us, preliminary market research. And then at the end of the month, they're going to actually come to us and show us some of the research that findings that they have. The expected cost for the study itself is a little over $45,000. There's a few unknowns at this point because we don't have the research conducted. We don't know what we would need from you guys as it pertains to direction for 2024. Additionally, we don't know the cost to actually implement any of the salary adjustments that they say will be needed to bring us up to speed and make us more competitive. The other piece we don't know at this point is over what time period we would be looking at. So this is just, again, something you should have on your radar.
Emerald ash for EAB. We got about 5,400 city-owned ash trees. We're treating about 2,800 of them every other year. The other 2,600 were deemed non-treatable. All of the ones in the City Hall parking lot will likely be removed this year. They're in rough shape. We will look at replacing those. And that is our goal, to replace every tree we have to take down, replace them one for one with a new tree. Even though we've been successful in getting anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 a year over the last 5 years, we're anticipating a shortfall of $3.1 million to do all of these removals. And this next five-year time period is critical, because once an ash tree dies, it becomes brittle extremely fast and will fall. And we don't want trees falling, just spread all through town. We want to be proactive in removing them before they become a safety hazard. We're going to be attending another grant session that the state is putting on, where I believe we could get up to $500,000 potentially if we were successful to go towards our EAB strategy. We're also short on capacity of managing more grants like that. And as part of our budget request, we're looking at potentially adding some staff to help manage our forestry program. But other funding options would be, the last thing we want to do is increase the general fund, but that may be necessary. Issuing bonds and pay them back, and like I said, grants as much as we can. Okay. The other last thing on the EAB grant potential, there may also be some homeowner assistance that we're going to look at, because these are just the trees the city owns. Of course, homeowners have ash trees, and some don't have the means to take them down. So we're anxious to find out what assistance might be available to residents.
Through your experience?
Yes.
Through your experience, an ash tree today that you looked at it, that's not treatable to the time that it may potentially fall, what is that expectation?
7 to 10 years. And we can look at, it first started in Michigan back in the early 2000s, St. Paul, I think, like 2009. Here it was 2016. But once you see that the tree is not doing well, it's already had EAB for 3 to 5 years.
All right. Any further comments or questions around that? All right, well, thank you, staff, for presenting out on that.
So we know that we presented a ton of information there. Most of the projects we highlighted, thanks to Zach in the back of the room over there, created this Gantt chart showing over our own projected time.
Nope.
Oh, cool. Oh, I guess we're done.
I did this before. It must have been
long. Oh, it must have.
It must have been 9:45.
All right, I'm going to refer to their paper copy.
Ghost giving us signals.
Anyway, if you're interested, just get some sense of preliminary timing in terms of project planning, construction implementation. That's there. And then really the last two slides, or the last three slides, or really two slides. Tony, do you want to touch base on the current bond situation?
Yeah, with the current bond situation, you can just kind of...
It's this slide right here.
Yeah, it's the one that said time life of current bond. Slide 33, if you can have the printout. What I will say is that the city only has about 2% of their total budget is dedicated towards debt. And as you can see in 20, the big ticket items kind of go away in 2032, and then they kind of tailor off, and then we just have about $300,000 in bonds starting in 2034 out to 2040. So if we could, you know, put some additional bonds on here. So if we decided, like I told you, we only have about 2%, if we decide to go up to about 5%, we could have another $2.5 million that we could put towards these projects. Of course, we wouldn't pay all that $2 million to one. It would be spread out amongst everything that's on the Gantt chart. Anything you want to add on that? That's all I have.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, compared to other cities, you know, we haven't done a ton of bonding relative to other cities. There's some capacity there, but anytime we do issue a bond, ultimately that does get paid by the taxpayers. So we can never forget that. What this doesn't reflect, though, is, you know, we previously got a permission from the community around the park bonds, and this isn't a reflection of the entire park bond commitment to. So those are still anticipated. They're not on this chart, but as we initiate additional park bond projects and sell bonds, those would be added to this as well.
So the only ones that's on here are the 2019 and the 2021. Right. Those are park bond projects.
Those we've already funded.
Yeah.
Yep. And then the last slide is really, we've mentioned a couple times, the three things that I would suggest we probably bring back in September would be we need to make some decisions relative to the Central Fire Activity Center, Senior Center. And then lastly, we had shared that we're going to be doing a resident survey here this fall. Are there any specific questions that you all would want us to consider in that survey relative to, you know, what you just presented? And I know we presented a ton this evening, but I thought it was important to give sort of a big picture overview of kind of what we're seeing and as we look out on the horizon, and just want to make sure that y'all see kind of all of those elements as we make some short-term and some long-term decisions.
I have a question for Brian. The community activity center, there was some plans that you stated would convert the arena, the ice rink one into three basketball courts, a volleyball court, and potentially pickleball. Is that what you said?
Yeah, multi-purpose court. So it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be three basketball courts and three volleyball. It'd be three courts that could be divided. Could be basketball.
And with that, you said we will be impacting those three organizations that use that already. And did I previously hear you say prior to today that those hockey organizations was leaving us anyway?
One of the organizations, North Metro Youth Hockey, that served the bulk of Brooklyn, you know, the major geographic area of Brooklyn Park, dissolved after last season due to low participation. So the remaining kids that are in that geographic area have either joined Osseo Maple Grove Hockey Association or Champlain Park Hockey Association.
And both of them still use our facility.
Correct. Yes.
And so making a decision on the gymnasium, which we definitely need, mm-hmm. would be adversely impacting the hockey kids that's playing hockey.
To a degree, the demand for ice rental between the Three Rivers Figure Skating Club and the two hockey organizations isn't enough to fill the two rinks. To begin, you know, so it's barely enough to fill one rink. But they've had the luxury of having two rinks, so if something's booked on one rink, they've got a backup plan, right? So there would be some inconvenience and some trade-out, certainly within that regard. And they're likely they would have some less hours available to them overall. But we've estimated it's about 80% of our that ice rental is. We need to find other communities, and other communities are interested. St. Michael Elmerville or Rogers or Wayzata, those hockey associations are, would be interested in some of that leftover ice. But we don't feel like that serves the need of our Brooklyn Park residents when there's this distinct need for more gym space.
Yeah, I just want to get your clarity on that for the gymnasium that we need that people don't have. So, but then I also want to learn who we impact and how much of an impact we would be putting on the hockey kids as well. So,
yep.
That's it, thanks.
All right, so thank you to our directors and staff for preparing that. Did you want us to speak to any of this, or are you just going to bring this to us in September?
The top three items we'll bring in September. We need to know this evening if there's anything in particular we want to, use the resident survey to gather any input on. If council members want to send me any notes.
We had some of that discussion last month, right, in terms of the survey question.
Yeah,
I don't quite remember what I said.
We had some initial feedback. But we also mentioned we were going to bring back this discussion and then hear back. But, we've tested chickens. We've tested some of the water stuff last time. We tested. Zach, come me out here. It's 10 o'clock.
Water and chickens, big thing with the aquatics.
Yeah. Aquatics. That's right. That was another big one.
Willingness to pay type of questions.
Yeah.
I think we should do that, especially for water softening. I think we... Some of those I think we should ask again, just to kind of see if there's any temperature change. And I forget what space.
Did you say aquatics was in there?
It was previously, yeah.
But not this time.
That's what
I think aquatics should be in there. Splash pads, swamp type of aquatics whatsoever in our city should be part of this survey.
And then Councilor Morrison, and I'll defer to Brad, but when you were studying the park bond, you also did an additional survey about aquatics and their willingness to pay, and that's why aquatics were left out of the park bond, because
The additional survey we did was with Trust for Public Land, and it became kind of their threshold for approval was $26 million. The aquatics facility was $30 million. The reinvestment in the park system was $26 million. So it was an either-or piece at that point. But then the last resident survey, we did ask about willingness to pay on an aquatics survey. I believe that was the last one, right?
Looks like Zach's looking it up right now. I would say this. If whatever questions we put in there, I think that we have to be... there has to be interest from council. If they come back and say 70% of people say, hey, yeah, we want the city to spend money in a pool, are y'all...
Yeah, I'm not interested. That's me. That knows. So, one thing I'll say is you can saddle your own residents with debt, not debt, but higher taxes based on them nickeling and diming themselves. So you say, we're going to do this part, we're going to do this thing with the rec center, then we're going to do this with fire, then we're going to do this and that. Then you put another question, and they say, oh, that sounds good. Oh, it's only an extra $26 a month. And they turn around, 10 years from now, we have a tax rate that is higher than general, you know, the other cities that are in our range, right, or our size.
We already exist today.
Yeah, so like maybe you want to add to that, that could be legacy you're seeking, but I'm just saying, if we're already there, right, and the reason we're doing this development, I don't think we want to nickel and dime more, right? So to your aquatics request, I would say, I didn't bring it up because that would be one of those things that would add to the tax burden if we actually decided on it. I believe this is a pretty aggressive agenda right now in front of us, and getting stuff just for the sake of telling residents, you got this thing, you're going to enjoy it, but it doesn't do anything for tax revenue. It doesn't do anything for strategically pushing down crime, right? Which are kind of the issues that we have really been pushing and talking about that are real, could be Achilles heels for the city. I don't see why we would necessarily put that in front of people. Because then they're going to come back and say, well, look at the survey. And then we as a council have to say, yes or no, creating work for ourselves. I don't believe in creating any more work because I don't know how many $100 million is put in front of us. And we got to find grants for it. And we got to go to the legislature for it. And we got to find solutions for it. We cannot be all things to everybody. And the reality is on some of this stuff, we got outflanked. What is that city up? Is that Crystal up the street? They have that aquatics thing?
Yeah, I mean, they had an existing 50-meter pool.
No, there's like
New
a
Hope
little...
Building.
Is that New Hope? Yeah, up the street.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's New Hope.
Yeah, New Hope had an existing pool that they got. Yeah.
There's like a whole splash updated thing. You go outside and you play in with the kids. It's,
yeah.
It's near the train tracks or whatever. But anyways, my point is that some of this stuff other people have, and people are just from Brooklyn Park are going to drive there and get it. We need to strategically say, we know we got this public safety reputation and reality, and we have a revenue thing that we've got to address long term. How does that fit into these two things? And then we're rebranding ourselves with real investment in diversity. So where does the Aquatic Pad or where do some of these issues, where do these other ideas fit within those priorities that we have been systematically, since January, pushing and leaning into? So that's my general advice.
Yeah, I mean, as Kim mentioned, you know, Zane and Oak Grove is not here, so those are potentially some additional investments.
Right.
You know, if we didn't have some of the water infrastructure investments, the 252, the LRT, the fire stations, I personally don't disagree with the idea of, you know, it would be great to have a community pool, to have more aquatic fun stuff. It just seems like we got to figure out one way or another what we're going to do with some of these essentials and then see if there's capacity in our partnerships. I mean, we were this close to the Y coming here, and right before COVID hit, for them to essentially build out the pool, and maybe we can revisit those conversations with potential partners too. So then the risk is on a partner and not as much on the city.
$399 million, not including trails. There's a total cost for on the high end.
$400 million on the high end. So, any other questions or concerns around that besides the $400 million?
We need some grant writers.
Yes. All right. So, any council member reports and announcements? City manager reports and announcements.
Just a couple things real quick. National Night Out, for those of you who are either riding with police or fire, meet at the police training room at 5:30 tomorrow, so in the police station at 5:30. Next Monday is our annual council commission meeting. For those of you that are new on council, it's really a great opportunity to sort of connect with all the commission members from the various commissions, opportunity to thank them first and foremost for their work, for volunteering here in Brooklyn Park. And it's kind of how the format will go is we're going to actually be providing we typically have kind of one focus area. We're going to be providing a streamlined version of what you just saw here, just to give them a sense of some of these large-scale projects that are on the horizon. The mayor will be involved in sharing a few words of appreciation for the commission members, and other council members can chime in if they like. And then each chair of the commission will share just very briefly kind of a summary of what the commissions are working on, and have dinner. So it's, again, largely meant to be a recognition and celebration. There'll also be pictures, so where you're finest, or whatever feels comfortable. There'll be pictures outside if you were a liaison for what? But there'll be pictures. And you'll always look nice, so just be prepared that there will be pictures. So if people want. And then last thing I'll say is I was roped into doing a slight dance with Councilmember Lee and Councilmember Tran of our Brooklyn Park Night Out, and my two daughters really enjoyed that short Facebook video that was put up.
So. I was conveniently not there.
I
just wasn't there.
I do need to see it.
It's not, I saw it. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, so, all right, nothing else? Meeting is adjourned.
CIC is Common Interest Community Association.
What is that?
We've got him dancing, we've got you dancing. From River Park, I guess.